Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Hi everyone, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, meeting on air. Hey, I'm Dan, I'm an alcoholic and I'm your chairperson for today. Hi everyone. We'll open this meeting like we always do with the Serenity Prayer, so if you'd like to all join me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Okay, I'll read the preamble now to Alcoholics Anonymous. This is, says a little bit about what AA is and what it isn't. So Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So I'm very pleased today to have in the studio a group from the newly resurgent WELLYPAR, which is, stands for Wellington Young People in AA. And WELLYPAR stems from ICKYPAR, which is the International Convention of Young People in AA. I'll read a little bit about ICKYPAR and then we'll launch into some sharing. So ICKYPAR, the International Conference of Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous, ICKYPAR, was founded for the purpose of providing a setting for an annual celebration of sobriety among young people in AA. Since its inception, a growing group of people who at first would not consider themselves as young people has become regular attendees. The number of young people suffering from alcoholism who turn to AA for help is growing, and ICKYPAR helps to carry AA's message of recovery to alcoholics of all ages. This meeting provides an opportunity to young AAs from all over the world to come together and share their experience, strength and hope as members of Alcoholics Anonymous. AA members who attend the ICKYPAR return home better prepared to receive young people who come to AA looking for a better way of life. So that's what ICKYPAR is. WELLYPAR is basically a group of us that organise social events for sober alcoholics here in Wellington. And we've done things like karaoke nights, done a few of those. Sober gigs, walks and bowling, all that kind of fun stuff. So after this radio show we're going to go and have a meeting and talk about what we're going to do next. But for now, what we'll do is we'll share our experience, strength and hope as it relates to our alcoholism. So first of all, I'd like to ask Sydney to share.
Hi, I'm Sydney. I'm an alcoholic.
This is probably, I'm fairly new in my sobriety, and this is probably the first time I've shared my story, so bear with me. I guess I want to look at what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I actually had my first drink of alcohol probably when I was about 6, maybe 7, and it was accidental. My grandmother was a daily alcoholic, and there was vodka in a glass that I thought was water. I had a bit of a shock, but it kind of wasn't, I don't know, it wasn't that big a deal, and I kind of went on with my life. Tracking forward about, I would have been 13, so a good 7 years later, my mother was drinking with some friends of hers, and I was over at the house. It was all very normal, you know, there was a lot of drug use and a lot of drinking, and it was sort of like, well, now it's my turn. And even with that first drink, and I did, you know, I ended up blackout drunk, and I think I was vomiting in the bathtub, but even as I was doing it, I was kind of looking down on the people I could see drinking around me, and like, oh, well, I'm better than this, and I'm not going to have the issues you have with it, and, you know, it's going to be different for me. And it wasn't. You know, for whatever reason, I managed to drink a lot less than the people I was around in high school. I didn't party, and I kind of had this, like, you know, type A concept of like, you know, I'm going to be the best in the choir and I'm going to be the best at, you know, all of my classes and I'm going to get the Academic Excellence Awards. And I never did and it pissed me off. But, like, I guess a big thing for me is that I always felt like I didn't fit in. Like, I was so different to everyone else. And so I stayed away from them. But, you know, probably the handful of times I did drink while I was still in high school, blackout drunk, you know, doing ridiculous things, getting a real, like, and that was another thing is, like, you know, people remembered that, and that was, like, I did not want to be around you if you remembered what I did when I was completely wasted. I was dating someone from the age of 14 to 18, and I cheated on him a lot. And I always blamed it on the fact that I was drinking. It was like, oh, well, it's not me, it's alcohol. It's the way that alcohol affects me. This isn't me, babe, you don't understand. I have a problem. And I didn't mean that in the slightest. Like, I knew people in my life who had a problem. I was not someone with a problem, but it was really convenient. And then he decided he needed to control my drinking. And I volunteered for that until I wanted to drink and he wouldn't let me, and then I was really mad. And I would be, you know, I would tell the story of him to other people and I'd be like, oh, well, he doesn't let me drink unless he's given me the drink, even though I said that was a solution to our problem. And I'm like, oh, he doesn't let me have any friends or any male friends. And again, I was the one who suggested, like, oh, I'll get rid of all the guys in my life so that, you know, you don't have to feel insecure. And it's just that insane kind of behavior. You know, we had a very, codependent relationship, and I realize now that, like, that's just, you know, that's active alcoholism without drinking. It's just the way that I related to life, you know, with a real sense of isms. Anyway, I had agreed to marry him, and then his grandfather was dying, and it was Easter, so I thought that was a really good time to break up with him and get him to move out of the house. And I went to university, and I failed every single paper in my first semester. I was drinking a bottle of spirits pretty much every night with my flatmate at the time. And I finally, it was just such a short circuit for me because I saw alcoholism in my family and in my life. And as soon as I started drinking, they still had the problem and everything was fine. And like, they were the ones who couldn't handle alcohol. I was handling alcohol just fine. And you know, I wasn't eating, I wasn't going to classes, I was, you know, using a lot of other substances at the time as well, and I just didn't see it as a problem. It was like, this is great, this is what it means to be young, I'm finally doing it right. And, you know, and for whatever reason, over the next couple years, I realized I wanted to finish my degree, not so much for me, but for, you know, the way that other people would look at me. You know, and it all boiled down to a lot of insecurity, and I felt like, well, if I have a piece of paper, that'll make me feel less insecure. And I kept just trying to find the answers in more drinking, more relationships, more, anything that was more. And I ended up in Dunedin, and a friend of mine ran a bar, and she was a daily user of other substances but didn't really have a problem with alcohol. So I was like, you know, this is a perfect relationship because she won't drink my booze, but she also won't judge me. But she did. She did a lot. But she also supplied me with free booze. And, you know, there were a lot of nights that I don't remember. There were a lot of poor young men that I terrified with declarations of love and hatred, probably within, like, a span of about 5 minutes. And very serious, you know, very, very serious. And I kept on drinking, and I kept on looking for the answer of what the hell was wrong with me. And I could see all these things. It was because of the other people in my life who had addiction problems, and if they would just sort their stuff out, I would be fine. And yeah, it got pretty bad. And I did a lot of things I was really not, you know, did not want to advertise. And really, honestly, it's like I'd like to say that, you know, I came to AA because I realized that there was a solution to my drinking there. But I didn't really see my drinking as a problem. I was like, oh, I pushed the boat out a bit far, but, you know, that's just maybe my tolerance isn't high enough. I just need to drink more regularly and I'll be fine. But yeah, I mean, I was going to kill myself. And I was like, well, I knew about AA. I knew some people who had some time up sober. And I was like, well, you know, I can go there. People there talk about suicide. And they'll listen to me and I'll feel okay. And, you know, after that first meeting, I felt a sense of lightness that, you know, I'd never felt before. And I kept going back. But it didn't take me long. And it's like when I would share, especially a lot of the old timers were like, oh, yeah, that's alcoholic. But it didn't take me long to start seeing the differences. And I think that's the really difficult thing about coming in as a young person. You know, my first came into the rooms at 23. And I was like, well, you know, I haven't lost jobs. Well, I had, but I did not see that as a result of my drinking, even though I had lost a job because I didn't show up because I was hungover and I decided, no, I'm not going to go. And they called me and said, don't bother coming back tomorrow. But it's, you know, I hadn't lost families and I wasn't drinking every day and it wasn't as bad as it gets for some people. And I was just talking to someone this morning about how everyone's got to hit their own rock bottom and it does not look the same for all of us. And, you know, I think rock bottom for me is really, it's like, I can't live the way I'm living and I'm either going to kill myself or do something about it because I can't do it. You know, my tolerance just isn't that high. I can't hack it. And, but yeah, it didn't take me long in that fellowship to start seeing the differences and to start seeking out people who would tell me I didn't have a problem. And, you know, for whatever reason, the group that the main meetings that I was attending in Dunedin, there were a lot of people who were, you know, a lot older than I was. And I didn't, you know, I started seeing that, you know, we're not the same. You know, they're, look at them in their lives. Fucking, I'm fine. This is, you know, I'm a student. I get good grades. Like, this is, I don't need this. And I had a friend who was kind enough to tell me I didn't seem like an alcoholic. Of course, because he knew me when I wasn't drinking. Yeah, so I went back out. And it just got so bad so quickly. Like, not at first. I had 2 or 3 months of, like, being a seemingly normal drinker. Though, admittedly, the first time I drank again, I, like, went into blackout. And the second time, went into blackout again. But, like, they were sporadic enough and I had a nice enough time that it was like, this is great. And I told myself when I walked out that it's like, you're going to do this as research. And if you start seeing yourself as being alcoholic, you're going to go back to AA. And I thought about that for maybe 2 weeks, and then I was like, yep, cool, I'm sweet, this is great. And yeah, it got progressively worse and worse. And someone in the fellowship, about 4 months ago said to me, you know, I'm concerned about you. And my first thing was like, well, my drinking's fine, my job is just really stressful. And they were like, I wasn't talking about drinking. I was just talking about some of your behaviors. And so I got really, really drunk that night. Yeah, did some not great things, and I will hopefully never encounter the people that I was with that evening again. But, yeah, and then I realized that it's like I'm back at that space where it's like I can't live like this. So I came into the rooms, and my first meeting was a Saturday Night Fever meeting that's, you know, and I heard what I needed to hear that night, you know, and I saw people who looked genuinely happy. And I saw people like me, you know, I saw people that were similar age, similar space in life, doing similar things with similar stories. And I really have come to realize that it's like I need to start looking for what's the same. And it's like even with someone whose circumstances are completely different to mine, I relate to their ism. You know, I relate to the fact that being an alcoholic affects us the way that it does. You know, it's like my personality is the way that it is and my maladaptive ways of coping with life is the way that it is because I have alcoholism. And it's actually that simple. And, yeah, through working these steps and getting a sponsor and having a home group and starting to do service, like, my life is better today than I think it ever has been. You know, and that doesn't mean it's perfect, but I guess I'm just able to deal with things, and I think that's the big difference. It doesn't mean that it hasn't been harder, that rough things haven't still been happening. It's just that I'm able to cope and, yeah, and able to look at it with some clarity and kind of step back and realize, you know, how little is about me and how the only thing that I can actually change is my own behavior. That is, like, pretty much the only thing I have any control over is the way that I react to stuff. You know, I was listening to some sharing this morning. It's like, I don't even have control over my own feelings. That's just, they just are what they are. And like, my God, I can't control other people as much as I would like to. And yeah, today I'm a really grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this program treats what's wrong with me. And I think it is that simple that, you know, my problem comes down to my issues relating with alcohol and substance and just a fundamental inability to be with myself, you know, and I, without dealing with my past and dealing with my part in things, I can't be here. And it's like there are, as I see it, there are three ways to treat alcoholism, and that is to drink, to die, or to get a program and start looking at stuff and to learn the right ways of reaching out for help. And I really feel like that's where the teaching for me is, you know, AA is where that teaching is coming from for me, is learning the healthy way to deal with things and the healthy way to give and receive, because I really had no concept of that. It was like, I need to take everything, and then I need to give you everything, and then I need to take everything again until we're both, like, completely exhausted and spent, and we hate each other. But, you know, we're stuck because we couldn't see any other way out. And today, I feel like I have a better perspective, and I'm just really grateful to be here, and I think I'll leave it there. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Sydney. You're listening to Wellington Access Radio, 783 AM. This is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, and we've got the Welly Pie group in the studio today. The studio is packed full of people. Not all of them are going to share, but all of them are here listening. And thanks to all you guys that are listening too. If you're in New Zealand and you want to get in touch with AA, there's a free phone number you can call, 0800 229 6757 or 0800 AA Works. And that phone number is manned or womaned by somebody 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So you can call it whatever hour of the day or night you like, and a sober alcoholic will be there to answer your call and talk to you, answer some questions you might have, or tell you where your nearest meeting is. The meetings are also on our website, aa.org.nz, under meetings. And also, under meetings, there is a little spot, I'll just hover over here to the website, and meetings on air. So if you hover over meetings, it's got print meeting list and meetings on air. If you click on that, it'll take you to a long list of podcasts, effectively, of these meetings. So you can listen to us wherever you are, as long as you've got an internet connection. Pretty exciting. All right, well, let's carry on with the sharing. Andy, would you like to share?
Thanks, Dan. Andy, alcoholic. Well, I've been sober 6 months. I was sober 6 months on Monday past. And I've been coming to AA for 3.5 years. I've lived a fairly deplorable life. I was born into a very well-off family, private school educated. And I've managed to overreact and behave badly in pretty much every situation that's ever come to me in my life. I was a thief very early. I first drank when I was 12, drank to blackout on stolen wine, and I liked it, and I liked it a lot. And I then stole a lot of wine off my parents. I stole money off anyone I could. I fed my addiction any way I could for a very, very long time. It took me to 3 different continents. It led me to be homeless in South America. It led me to getting drugged in Thailand. It led me to getting robbed over a game of poker by some skinheads in the Czech Republic. It has my disease and the way that I have dealt with situations in my life. It led me to a position in my life where I wanted to die, and I couldn't see a way out. And today, life is full of challenges. And the only thing that I have control over is myself. And my intentions are good on the whole. My behavior is good. And it's through the program of Alcoholics, it's Alcoholics Anonymous, it's through my day-to-day life that I am still sober. And challenges happen. I lived a sick, deplorable life surrounded by sick, deplorable people. And I would react to every single situation that came in my way. And these days, those things still happen. I still have to deal with sick people. I still have to deal with malice. But I don't react anymore. I can't. I have to live in some semblance of peace, which I find through prayer and meditation, which I find through the love of a God that I do not understand. I find that through my friends within AA, and the life I live today is a far cry from where I came. And if I ever sit down and look at what I have and the life I live and the friends I have, they're real. They're real friends. And it's a real life. And I do good things in my life. And it's really due to this program, to having a sponsor, to working the steps, and to looking at what the right thing is to do in any situation. And I do not always get it right, but at least I have sobriety to look at things clearly, and I have people to talk about situations. And my life is 1,000 times better today than it was. Thank you.
Thanks, Andy. This is Wellington Access Radio 783M. We're listening to the Wellipa group here talking about their own alcoholism. Now, these radio shows are also available on iTunes. Now, I don't know much about iTunes, but apparently if you look it up, you know, AA on Air, you'll find us on iTunes, which is also pretty exciting. And it's a way for people in Wellington and from people not in Wellington, people from all around the world, to have a listen to us, listen to our Kiwi accents, and talking about experience, truth and hope. And it's great for people that haven't been to a meeting before and want to hear what it's like, and also people that have been to meetings but can't get to them as regularly as they would like. So, yeah. And we've also got a Facebook page. AA On Air Wellington is our Facebook page. And there's a link on iTunes on the Facebook page as well. And so feel free to jump on there and like us if you like, and you know, have a read of it and find out what's coming up in the world of AA On Air. So what we'll do is we'll carry on with the sharing now and hear another Kiwi accent. So, Colleen, would you like to?
Hi, I'm Colleen. I'm an alcoholic. Definitely don't have a Kiwi accent, but I'll share for you guys anyway. I've never done a meeting like this. This is pretty cool. Pretty exciting. Where do I start? I believe that alcoholism is a disease that centers in my brain. So I think that I had alcoholism before I ever picked up my first drink. And when I picked up a drink, I got relief. You know, like, my alcoholism makes my head, you know, it puts me in a place where, like, I don't cope well with life. My head just runs, and I don't seem to have a lot of control over that a lot of the time. And so when I picked up my first drink when I was a teenager, I experienced relief probably like I hadn't ever before. You know, it was calming and just kind of put me at ease. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to do this every day for the rest of my life. And, you know, growing up in a home where, you know, like, everyone drank. That's just what you did. You know, I was just like, oh, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, thinking, you know, I didn't realize that alcoholism came with consequences at that point. I just thought that it was just certain people lived like that. They just lived to drink every day. And so I made that my goal, and I was pretty successful for a long time. I drank frequently in high school with my friends, and, you know, I'm the type that I've always blacked out pretty much every time, you know, and always kind of woken up the next day being like, oh, sorry guys, you know, and it was funny for a long time until it wasn't funny anymore. And, you know, I woke up with tickets from the police in my pocket, or, you know, groups of people not speaking to me or whatever. And I went off to university, and things increased pretty quickly there. And I really was losing control of everything. You know, I couldn't pass classes, and I couldn't. Yeah, I remember I woke up one day in the afternoon after a heavy night of drinking, and it was And I went across the hall. I was living in a dorm room, and I said, "Oh, I skipped class this morning. I slept through." And they were like, "No, you came to class. We walked with you." And you know, I went and I opened up my notebook, and there was this illegible note taking that I had done. You know, I mean, and it was 2 p.m, and I hadn't remembered like this whole probably 2-hour period that I had already been awake and out doing things that day, and. You know, it wasn't even the same. It was from a night before of drinking, but that's what my alcoholism looked like. Like, it wasn't just that I drank for a little bit. It was like, it spilled into everything in my life, you know? It lasted all the next day, and, you know, at that period of time, it was like, if my friends were out drinking for some school function, then I was in my dorm room drinking alone so that we could all be drunk together when they got back, and, you know, it was just things like that, and that was my life for... You know, for a few years until, you know, I became that person that, I don't know, I was getting in trouble with the police a lot, and I was flunking out of all my classes, and I was just miserable, you know, and I was trying to sort it out. I was like, I can figure this out. I'll go to counseling, like, I'll get on medications, I'll do whatever, because this isn't alcoholism. Like, I couldn't see the alcohol was the problem. I thought that I could figure it out. And I tried all these things, and they didn't work, and that's because I have the disease of alcoholism, and for me, so far, there's only been one way to treat that, and that's through Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't know that that was available to me at the time, so I just carried on what I was doing, but I wasn't succeeding at school, and so I dropped out, basically, and moved home, and I thought, okay, I'll go home, and I'll... You know, it'll be all right. I'll be somewhere else. I'll be able to get it together a little bit, and you know, it'll get better. And it didn't. It meant that I wasn't on a campus where I could walk everywhere. It meant that I was drinking and driving every night. You know, or I moved next door to a bar so that I could drink. You know, I mean, it was just like things just got worse. Like I had no control over my drinking and. You know, I remember, like, crawling up the stairs in my apartment one night and just passing out on the floor because I couldn't even get into my bed. And I lived like that for a long time. And you know, it's like there's a lot of different stories that I hear in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're maybe the same as mine, but a lot of times they're a little bit different, you know, or a lot different. But I always related to the feelings, you know. Like, I didn't want to drink at that point, you know? I just didn't want to, and I couldn't not. And it was like, I couldn't not drink, and as soon as I started drinking, I couldn't stop, you know? And that's how it was for a long time. And it was just a really horrible way to live. So I went on this trip, and there were a few disastrous things that happened, but I survived, and I came home, and I went out one night and went into a blackout, and I, you know, called my parents in the middle of the night in tears and just freaking out, and then I got in my car and I drove in the opposite direction of my house, for some reason unknown to me, and I woke up in jail the next morning and had no idea if I had had anyone with me or if I had hit anyone on the road or anything, and it was terrifying, and I had to call my mom the next morning to come pick me up in the middle of the city. Of course, I ran into a friend on the street. That was really awkward. He was like, "How are you?" And I was like, "Well, I just got out of jail." You know, I mean, it was miserable. Here's the problem. I still didn't know about Alcoholics Anonymous, so I didn't have a choice because I couldn't cope with my life. I didn't know how to function without alcohol, and I didn't know there was a solution. And so as badly as I just wanted to do something different, I didn't have a choice. I had to keep drinking and, or in my case, find other substances to use. And it scared me. That situation scared me, and I wish that I could say that that was the point that I got sober. It took me a few more years. And I turned to other substances for a long time, and I was like, oh, here we go. Now I found something that I can control again, and I can, you know, like, I'm not having the same problems as I did with the alcohol, and, you know, I'll be all right, and I'll just do this every day for the rest of my life, you know? And it was that same thing. It was still like, I can't be me, so I got to figure out something else I can do for the rest of my life. And so, you know, I picked up these other substances, and the problem was, after a relatively short period of time, all the same things were happening from alcohol, you know? It was like blackouts and, you know, having all the apologies to make the next morning and, you know, dangerous driving and slurred speech and passing out and all that kind of stuff. And honestly, my life at that point just became really monotonous. It was the same thing every day. It was all I could do to go to work so that I could pay to keep my habit up so that I didn't have to be sober. And, you know, and like Sydney talked about, it was like, you know, like I didn't necessarily lose a job, but there were places I had to leave. I was like, I'm going to quit now, or I'm going to transfer to a different store before you figure me out, you know? And eventually, you know, the drugs and alcohol had stopped working a long time before. They really had. But again, like I said, I didn't have a solution, and so I just kept going. And so I got intoxicated at like 7 in the morning one day, and I was on my way to work, and I crashed my car into the back of another car, and you know, the police came, and they took me to work, and I had this moment of clarity, and I called my mom, and I said, I have a drug problem, and I need some help. And then it took me like 20 minutes to get to work, and then I called her again when I got to work, and I said, never mind. I don't really want your help. And she was like, too late, I'm taking you to treatment tomorrow. And I was like, okay, that sucks. But, you know, everyone was cool. My boss understood. They let me go, and I was like, I'm going to go to treatment for 30 days. And I showed up to treatment, and that's where I first heard about Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't mean that I was, like, super excited about it right away. At first, I was like, oh, I'll just do this 30 days. I'll go home. Like, it'll give me enough time to, you know, sober up and, you know, get it together a little bit. But while I was there, I got to learn about alcoholism being a disease, about that centering in my mind, and learn that there was a solution. And I started going to meetings. I was forced to get a sponsor through the treatment center I went through, and we started to work the steps together, and my life started to change pretty drastically, pretty quickly. You know, it's like, I was willing to do the work, because in that short period of time, I started to see that, like, that life wasn't normal. That life I was living was not normal, and I wasn't sane, I wasn't healthy, I wasn't, you know, I wasn't really living, and that became pretty clear, really, like, or really obvious pretty quickly, and my life got a lot different, and that hasn't, you know, like, my instinct is to get drunk or intoxicated or whatever, and so I was going against what I know. And I have to keep doing that, you know, because it's like my life is drastically different from what it was. Like, I was miserable and I couldn't stop, and, you know, I don't have to live like that today. And, you know, I did all the things that was suggested. I moved into a recovery house and I got a sponsor and I worked the steps and I, you know, prayed and meditated and, you know, I got involved in young people's and I got involved in other service and I just started doing everything that I could to battle this disease. So that I could actually offer something to life. And, you know, my life has been so different. I think one of the major things is just, like, it's made me realize, like, what I am capable of through Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's like, I never thought I was worthy of anything. And being sober, I've finished a bachelor's degree, and I've been to AA on, like, 5 different continents and been involved in different programs all around the world. And, you know, obviously I'm not from New Zealand. I don't have the Kiwi accent. You know, but I live here now and I have a job that I like most of the time. And, you know, I've met amazing people and I still keep in touch with people from home. And it's like, I've gotten to do just incredible things. To see the world like this sober is much better than the trip I took when I was drunk that had some disasters in it. You know, like, I mean, the gifts I've received is just innumerable. It's incredible, and it's, I don't know, you know, the biggest things a lot of the time is, like, just relationships that I have, being able to, you know, call my mom every week and tell her how I'm doing, and, we get to be in this program together, which is awesome, and just, you know, the little stuff, showing up for work on time and doing a good job and things that I just wasn't even capable of before, because of the solution that Alcoholics Anonymous has offered me. And, you know, my life isn't always perfect and it's difficult sometimes, but with this program, there's, you know, like, nothing's gonna get better if I pick up another drink. And this program gives me the opportunity to succeed or to just even have options. You know, before my life was so limited, and now, you know, it's like I can do anything I want. I probably will never be the president or anything like that. You know, but it's like my options are way more than what they were when all I could do was get loaded the second I woke up, you know? And, it's a huge gift, and that's not really a reflection of me. That's a reflection of Alcoholics Anonymous and the gifts that it's given me. So anyways, thanks for having me, and thanks for letting me share, and sorry if I went on too long.
Thanks, Colleen. You didn't go on too long.
This is Wellington Access Radio, 783 AM, and you're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. Now, Access Radio, who are the kind hosts of this show, have their own website. It's accessradio.org, and on that you can listen to recent editions of this show as well, and listen live from the website. Now, in the last month, the month of August, 2,162 hits from the website have listened to this show over the last month, and from all different places, such as Auckland, New Zealand, Turin in Italy, Belgium, France, Dijon and Fiji, Bermuda, Athens in Greece, Dublin in Ireland, Vienna in Austria, Tel Aviv in Israel, Hobart, Melbourne and Sydney, all places in Australia, and several places in the United States. Houston, Texas is one. Bellingham, WA, I don't know what, that's in America. Austin, Texas, Palm Springs, California, Sacramento in California, San Jose, all around the place. So, and also Czech Republic. Budajovic. Yeah, so there might be some skinheads listening if I remember there. So. alright, well let's carry on with the sharing. We've got a good few minutes left, so Alan, would you like to carry on with the sharing?
Thanks, Dan. Kia ora, my name's Alan and I'm an alcoholic. Wonderful to be here. It's been a great meeting and I've heard exactly what I needed to hear for today, for this alcoholic anyway. I heard my own story and from someone else's standpoint. I heard about the drinking, which was which sounded horrible, and it was exactly the same for me. I loved alcohol. I really, really did. I was a wino, and in the beginning I loved beer. I can't actually remember the first time I had a drink. I was doing other stuff before I picked up a drink, but the difference was I could put that stuff down and leave it alone for a couple months. But with the drinking, it really latched onto me. It was like a barnacle, I guess. And in the beginning, I really thought I was having fun. I thought I was free. I liked the feeling that came over me. Like Colleen just said, you know, I do remember talking to some of my drinking buddies going, look, this is what I want to do for the rest of our life, for the rest of my life anyway. I remember one of my friends, Kiel, had a son, and me, her and her boyfriend at the time, we said together, look, let's grow old together, get in wheelchairs and just drink, and and my godson can just push us around all day, you know, and I was sort of half serious, because the idea that I could drink for the rest of my life really appealed to me. But that's when it was fun. Even back then, you know, like I was a blackout drinker too, and in the beginning it was sort of fun, you know, like I would come to and have a good laugh about it. And even in the morning, like we used to call it when we got up, like having a bad case of the oh no. It's like, oh no, what have I done last night? What did I say? You know, the amount of times I had to be carried home, and you know, and the list goes on. The difficult thing for me is that if I fast track about just before I came into AA, I was given what I wished for and so much more. You know, I was, you know, I tried so much to get a hold on my drinking, and nothing seemed to be working. I'd been court appointed to go to another group of meetings, which wasn't AA, but I didn't want to be there. And when I got there, I think this time was for stealing a cask of wine, which wasn't the worst thing that I'd done under the influence. But I remember getting to this meeting and people were talking about drugs and alcohol, and I remember thinking that they were losers, you know, and, you know, when's this going to end so I can just go and get on with my life? And, you know, long story short, the drink got the better of me, and there was nothing that I could do to stop the drinking. I tried antabuse, and antabuse was the thing that my doctor had guaranteed me that if I drank on it, I was going to feel very, very awful. It was quite dangerous, in fact. And the thing that was really surprising, not surprising now that I look back on it, is that wasn't strong enough, that knowledge wasn't strong enough to stop me from having another drink. And there were other things too, like the sweet promises I made to my friends and my family, and none of those were strong enough. And I think when I said it to my friends and family that this is the day that I will get my shit together and really try to be a, you know, a good son, brother, friend, whatever, I think I really, really meant it at the time. However, you know, I had a disease. Like Colleen said, I'm mentally and bodily different from non-alcoholics. Once I have put a drink into my system, all bets are off. I can't guarantee where I'd end up. And the only thing that really worked in my life, that has worked so far, has been Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been here for just under 5 years, and hopefully one day at a time I'll continue to stick around. So thank you very much, Dan.
That's great, Alan. This has been Wellington Access Radio, 783 AM. You've been listening to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, the Welly Power Group. Thanks heaps, guys. It's been an awesome meeting. So if you'd like to all join me to close the meeting with a serenity prayer, that'd be great. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.